President Volodymyr Zelensky visits Ukraine's closest ally in the region.
President Zelensky said to President Duda, "You have not abandoned Ukraine. You stood with us shoulder to shoulder, and we are grateful to you."
Plus, an Orthodox church in Ukraine is under scrutiny for its ties to Russia.
Representatives of this church were accused of either supporting Russian invasion or supporting Russian soldiers, even like hiding Russian soldiers.
And later in the program, a heart-wrenching virtual reality exhibit shows the real-time impacts of Russian bombardments in Ukraine. Today is Wednesday, April 5th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Lori London in Washington. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and his wife were welcomed with military honors in Poland on Wednesday at the start of a state visit that's meant as a gesture of thanks to the neighboring nation for its crucial support in Ukraine's defense against Russia's invasion. I spoke with VOA's Miroslava Gungadze, who is in Warsaw following Zelensky's visit. Why now, and what is on the agenda?
Poland became a key Ukraine ally during this war. And President Duda and Prime Minister Morawiecki visited Ukraine many times this year. And the Zelensky visit is seen as a symbolic gesture, maybe like reciprocity for the help Ukraine received from its neighbors. Today, during the appearance with President Duda, President Zelensky said to President Duda, "You have not abandoned Ukraine. You stood with us shoulder to shoulder, and we are grateful to you. We believe this is the historic relationship." And it's indeed, it is become a historic relationship. All the past misunderstanding is left in the past, and now Poland and Ukraine became best allies and best friends. So basically, Zelensky as well, I have to add that Zelensky is seen in Poland as a noble man who did not abandon his country in the most difficult times. Today, I talked to the advisor to the Polish FMA, and that's what he told me in the interview. Ukraine is fighting our fight, Polish leadership say. So this is very important for Poland to support Ukraine. It's better, actually, but they frankly said it's better that Ukraine would fight Russians with their own soldiers and we will help them that then we will fight Russians if Ukraine falls. So this is very, very clear for Poland that supporting Ukraine, they are supporting and defending their country as well. So the Polish president invited Ukrainian president for broad talks on security, economic, political cooperation between two countries. According to the Kale Institute, Poland is the world's fourth most generous provider of overall support to Ukraine, according to its GDP, following the Baltic states. So two sides today are planning to sign an agreement on purchasing Polish military supplies, as well as a participation of Polish companies in the rebuilding process of Ukraine. And today, Poland as well promised four additional MiG planes, fighter jets, to give to Ukraine. They already gave four, and they are promising four additional ones.
I understand President Zelensky is also planning to meet with some Ukrainian refugees in Poland. Is that correct?
Absolutely. This is one of the, as well as other, one of the main objective. Poland accepted over a million Ukrainian refugees. Overall, 10 million Ukrainians crossed Ukrainian-Polish border through last year from the beginning of the war. Many of them returned, many of them settled in other countries, but over a million still are in Poland and settled in Poland. So for President Zelensky, it's very important to talk to its people, because a million Ukrainians, a lot of people, and it's important for he wants them to come back and be active and be able to actually contribute not only to Poland but to back in Ukraine as well. So he would be speaking in a palace today in the royal castle today at 6 p.m. and then meeting with Polish establishment say guests, not refugees, our guests, calling Ukrainians guests of Poland.
VOA's Miroslava Gongadze in Warsaw. Analysts say the war in Ukraine has been largely a stalemate in recent months, despite high casualty counts on both sides. But in the city of Chasiv Yar, the war has become deadlier and more dangerous week by week. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports.
We're here in shelter in Chasiv Yar, a city in eastern Ukraine that has become increasingly dangerous in recent weeks and months. This city is the closest journalists and even the most adventurous aid workers can get right now to Bakhmut, a city that is hotly contested between Russia and Ukraine. We came here in January, and at that time it was quite violent, and we saw a lot of destruction, and most people had fled. But today, coming here again, it was shocking. On every block we saw windows shattered, destroyed buildings, rubble on the streets. Businesses that had been open are now shuttered, and their windows are either broken or boarded up. We have been told that most of the people here fled a long time ago, and that there are now about 1,500 people, mostly existing in shelters as much as they can, that are hanging on.
We asked people why would they stay, and most people said that it was because either they did not have enough money to go, or they felt they had nowhere else to be. Reporting from Chasiv Yar in Ukraine, Heather Murdoch, VOA News.
French President Emmanuel Macron says he wants to engage with China to seek a shared responsibility for peace in Ukraine when he meets with Chinese leader Xi Jinping this week. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
French officials say Macron plans to urge Xi in talks on Thursday to use Beijing's influence with Russian President Vladimir Putin, but he doesn't expect a big shift in the Chinese position. Macron is accompanied by European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen in a show of European unity. Xi and Putin declared their governments had a no-limits friendship before Moscow's February 2022 attack on Ukraine, while Macron wants to try to build and somehow engage China toward a shared responsibility for peace and stability on international issues, including Ukraine. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. A Kyiv court last week ordered a leading priest to be under house arrest. Ukraine's top security agency said he was suspected of justifying Russian aggression, a criminal offense. It was the latest move in a bitter dispute over a famed Orthodox monastery. I talked about this ongoing controversy with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. It sounds like this is all part of a very bitter dispute. What can you tell us about this?
This religious topic is becoming more and more important within the society, within the Ukrainian society, especially the topic of this Orthodox Church, because it has a certain connection to Russian Church. If we go deep into the history, there is this discussion within the society for decades now in Ukraine, and since the collapse of the Soviet Union, Russian Church basically created a certain department of Ukrainian Church under its control. Why I'm saying this? Because this church, in their official document, they are called Ukrainian Orthodox Church under Moscow Patriarchate, and the head of this church is a member of Russian Church Synod. So basically, he is present at these high top high meetings with representatives of the Russian Church in Russia. And for a lot of years, Ukrainian society had this discussion of the impact the church has on people's, minds in the religious way, and not only religious way, because there were a lot of scandals around head priests and head representatives of this church, and especially starting from 2014, when a lot of churches around Ukraine, especially in the east and in Crimea, when Russia occupied, annexed Crimean Peninsula and part of the Donetsk and Luhansk regions, A lot of these churches were quite positive in joining Russian church separately. So it was really a huge discussion, and also a lot of, you know, other scandals.
The Ukrainian government has been cracking down on the Ukrainian Orthodox Church over what it says are historic ties to, as you mentioned, the Russian Orthodox Church, and whose leader apparently has supported Russian President Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine. Is that accurate?
So basically what happened is that this church, they never said directly that Russia has invaded. They were always very, you know, they were trying to avoid this topic. And of course, for Ukrainian society, it was very painful. And now what's happening that there is another Ukrainian church in Ukraine, which has a separate Tomos, which is approved by the Constantinople Patriarchate and other patriarchates. And there is this Ukrainian church, and the society wants this church to take over main monasteries and, well, most of the churches in the country, and basically to promote this Ukrainian church more, because a Russian church in Ukraine always had this huge impact and huge financial support. And what's happening now is that, and again, when the full-scale invasion began, Russian church in Ukraine, they never really showed their position clearly. And this is why a lot of investigation began. And the government is taking it very seriously, because basically there are a lot of cases when representatives of this church were accused of either supporting Russian invasion or supporting Russian soldiers, even like hiding Russian soldiers and this kind of things. And of course, all this should be investigated and proved. But what we can see now that investigations is ongoing, and especially the head, different heads of this church, they were officially accused, and even this particular person who we started our conversation with, who was the head of Kyiv Pechersk Lavra, which is one of the main monasteries of Ukraine and even of the Orthodox world in general, he is under the Ukrainian sanctions, and he has a huge history of different scandals within the country. The problem, at least this is how it's seen from the inside of the society and inside of the country, the problem is that this Russian church in Ukraine never made it clear what is their position, and even in some cases they showed their support of Russia and of Russian church representatives. And this is why now there is this huge wave of protests against this church in this past week in different parts of the country. There were a lot of meetings of representatives of the community who were voting for basically stopping the lease of the land to Russian church in Ukraine and to give it to Ukrainian church.
So what ultimately does the Ukrainian government want to see happen with this church?
So Ukrainian government wants this Russian church in Ukraine to demonstrate clear position. So either to remove such scandalous personalities from being members of this church, and especially from being top members of this church. But for the moment, what we can see that Russian church in Ukraine leadership, they defend such people. And of course, for the government, this is kind of a sign that probably they do not ready to change their position. And of course, after the beginning of the full-scale invasions, this question became even more painful for the society. And within the society, there are more and more negative reactions towards this church, especially towards the actions of particular people representing this church.
Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. Pope Francis urged the faithful Wednesday to pray for the mothers of soldiers who have died in the war in Ukraine.
Mio pensiero va alle mamme. Alle mamme dei soldati ucraini e russi.
On Thursday, Pope Francis will start a series of ceremonies leading up to Easter Sunday. Well, Ukraine is also home to one of the world's largest Jewish communities, which includes Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. This year, as the slavery to freedom story of Passover unfolds at sundown on Wednesday, Russia's invasion of Ukraine has brought more significance to the Jewish community in Ukraine. I spoke with Ukraine Chief Rabbi Yaakov Bleich about how people are planning to celebrate during this difficult time.
So before the war, we estimate approximately 360,000 Jews living in Ukraine throughout, you know, Ukraine before the war began. Many people left, just like, you know, from the general population, many people left. I would say probably 15 to 20% of the population at some point evacuated. Some came back, some didn't. I would guesstimate from the Jewish community approximately the same numbers, maybe a little bit higher. So I would guesstimate that there's still probably 250,000 Jews left in Ukraine now. And what we have found is that many of them have moved over from the east, from the front, and have moved over to places like that are considered relatively more safe, like to Kiev or to the Carpathians, to western Ukraine, to Lviv, to Chernivtsi, and people are just coming together. It's very, very fascinating to see how during the holidays, you know, people come out. We think that who's going to come, who's there, but throughout Ukraine, the rabbis are there, they're working, their synagogues are open, and they're celebrating the holidays, and people are coming. So it really is fascinating to see how people are coming together. First, we're helping each other and helping the general community, the general outreach that's going on between people and people's communities is really, truly, you know, warms your heart, and it's fascinating.
This won't be a normal Passover, but I'm sure there are still plans to celebrate this holiday and gather. How is it different, and what are the plans?
The shock and awe was last Passover, a year ago. Okay, that's when it really was really, really, really difficult, because there were curfews all over still, and early curfews, and the Passover Seder, the dinner, is celebrated the first and the second evening of Passover, and it usually goes pretty late. So last year, anyone that wanted to be hosted in the community for Passover had to be staying in the community centers. So that was really difficult. It was just the beginning of the war still, and people were really, really frightened. There were not a lot of people, but whoever was there, they really showed up, and it was really, to a great extent, shocking the way that people came last year. This year, people are much more, what we would say, back to normal to an extent. And, you know, it's, again, everything is relative, because in the cities like Kherson, you know, it's, I don't know if there's going to be a lot of celebrating going on. Whereas in Odessa and Zaporizhia, which are still close to the front, the communities are working, and there will be celebrations taking place in the synagogues and community centers for Passover. So it's definitely going to be different than it was in the years before the war. But relative to last year, I think it'll be much more normal. I mean, last year, the matzah factories all shut down when the war began. This year, they're all working, you know, till Passover, you know, producing and sending, and you know, it's much easier to get food in and things like that. Last year was very, very difficult. This year, people prepared, you know, Passover, we eat special foods and stuff like that. So I think that this year, things are going to be relatively normal compared to what happened last year.
And what is your message this year to your congregants and the community?
You know, my message has been the same throughout this war, and that message is that the redemption of the Jewish people from Egypt was something that was considered not only illogical and difficult, but impossible 3,335 years ago. However, God was there with them. He took them out, and he took them out for a purpose. And I think that that's one of the greatest lessons, is that we have to know that freedom, even if it comes at whatever price it comes with, but it's for a purpose, and that purpose is to create a society, to live in peace and harmony, to respect people, to respect others, to allow people to flourish. That's what the idea of the redemption on Passover was, and that's what it remains. You know, the Jewish people celebrate our holidays with the strong belief that the same spiritual powers that God brought thousands of years ago when these events took place repeat themselves today. We have a possibility today to be redeemed, to become free from all of our bondage, all of our slaveries, all of our different issues and problems that are keeping us back from flourishing, developing as individuals and as communities. So when we celebrate this year, we're looking forward to celebrating not only the freedom of the Jews from Egypt 3,335 years ago, but we're looking to celebrate freedom for all peoples, the freedom from all these wars, hatred, murder, and everything that we've seen taking place over the last 13 months in Ukraine.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us and, you know, explain the importance of Passover and how the Jewish community is alive and well in Ukraine, in Kyiv.
We're there to stay.
Yaakov Bleich,
chief rabbi of Ukraine and Kyiv. The exhibition Through the War in Poland is using virtual reality to demonstrate in real time how Russia's war is destroying parts of Ukraine. The exhibit includes virtual reality videos from Ukrainian cities and villages liberated by defenders of Ukraine. Some of the videos can be overwhelming. For VOA, Lizia Bakalets has more from Warsaw.
Destroyed Maria plane at the Gostomel airport. Shattered houses in the town of Irpin and Borodyanka in the Kyiv region. And mass burials in Izum. All these places in Ukraine visitors can see on virtual reality glasses in the exhibition called Through the War.
When you put on glasses, you fly like a bird and see all that horror. You can look around at all 360 and you seem to be on, for instance, the street Voksania in the city of Bucha.
All the videos are digitized drone footage. Virtual reality creates effects of presence. Organizers say the videos have more impact on viewers than ordinary news footage.
Everyone is absolutely horrified by what they've seen, and people are not watching in all the locations because it's difficult emotionally.
Ukrainians often cry, and foreigners are shocked by what they see.
If you watch it on like a video, YouTube, it's just, you know, just video, but in there, you just, in these places, the environment, the sounds, the visual, everything just make you just there. So feel really.
We watched video of the nine-story buildings all burned. There were no apartments, nothing.
I don't understand how people who live there can feel all these emotions every day.
One of the exhibit's goals is to raise awareness of the mental health of civilians and military personnel during the war. There is no entrance fee, but visitors can donate money to create mutual support groups for soldiers of the armed forces of Ukraine. Veterans will work in these groups.
Soldiers should trust those around them, and so far nothing better than equal to equal has been invented. At least our military will see the process. Soldiers will be shown that it is normal, it is okay to go to a specialist for a therapeutic group if they have any problems.
The organizers also collect funds for producing combat drones developed by the military with civil engineers. Oleksiy Oleksiuk is a soldier of the armed forces of Ukraine and one of the drone creators. He says the drone is already tested and several Ukrainian military units are interested in it.
One drone costs $2,000. One drone costs $2,000. So the value of human life can now be realistically measured. Not to send a person to a dangerous zone, but to send a drone instead.
The exhibit will take place in all major cities in Poland. Organizers also plan to show it in Belgium, Denmark, Norway, Canada, and the U.S.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.